Good morning, and thank you all for coming to my early talk. Today I'm going to talk about how soybean aphid affects intraguild predation of a soybean aphid parasitoid in the field. And to start, I'm going to describe the system in which I work. Currently, there's a classical biological control program targeting the soybean aphid, Aphis glycines, which is an invasive pest of soybean plant in North America. It is attacked by a large number of resident predators, which do aggregate to soybean aphid density dependently, and sometimes strongly affect soybean aphid populations. However, soybean aphid still reaches treatable levels, and as a result, the classical biological control agent, Binodoxus communis, has recently been released against soybean aphid. Binodoxus communis is a specialist, solitary endoparasitoid of the soybean aphid. And it's at risk of intraguild predation by these resident predators. If intraguild predation is strong enough, it may render Binodoxus communis an ineffective biological control agent. So, to discuss intraguild predation a bit more specifically, what I mean is, when I'm talking about these species, when I'm referring to the intraguild prey, that's Binodoxus communis. Binodoxus communis, the intraguild prey, is eaten by the resident predators, which are called the intraguild predators, and both the intraguild predators and the intraguild prey compete for a third species, the soybean aphid, which is deemed the extraguild prey. In addition, you can also see that the soybean aphids and Binodoxus communis are engaged in an apparent competition relationship because they both share common predators. It's known that extraguild prey density can affect the strength of intraguild predation. And if we know how it affects the intraguild predation of Binodoxus communis, it may help us to predict how much Binodoxus communis will be interfered with as a soybean aphid parasitoid by intraguild predation. The majority of tests studying the effect of extraguild prey density have occurred either in a laboratory or in a mesocosm setting. And here, when extraguild prey density is increased, generally what is reported is that there's a dilution effect resulting in lower intraguild predation. In contrast, there's been one test on the effect of increasing extraguild prey density in the field. And here, when you move from lower extraguild prey density to higher, a dilution effect was reported, but this was balanced by predator aggregation being allowed to occur, which resulted in a constant level of intraguild predation. So the primary goal for our study was to determine how in our system extraguild prey density or soybean aphid density affects intraguild predation of Binodoxus communis mummies in the field. And Binodoxus communis mummies are the pupating form of the parasitoid inside of the dead aphid exoskeleton. As a secondary goal, we wanted to determine if intraguild predation against Binodoxus communis mummies generally was affected by by variables in the surrounding field. To achieve these goals, we created an outplant experiment with three treatments. On potted plants that we reared raised in a greenhouse, we reared Binodoxus communis until there were 20 mummies on the plants. To that, we created the treatments by adding either 2, 20, or 200 soybean aphids, resulting in the three treatments you see here. We then took these potted plants and we brought them out into the field and planted them into soybean rows. And in order to determine how the surrounding field affected intraguild predation, instead of putting all of our treatments into a single field, we put just a single repetition in one field and spread these repetitions among 31 different fields. Starting the day after putting the potted outplants into the field, we collected data on a daily basis. Specifically, we determined on the experimental plants the fate of the mummies, whether they were still whole and alive, whether they had been chewed up by resident predators, or whether Binodoxus communis had emerged successfully from the mummy stage. We also counted the aphid density and the number of predators on our experimental plants. To determine the effect of the surrounding field, we did a one-time sample of the per plant aphid density in the surrounding field, the soybean size as measured by the number of leaves, and also the relative predator density by putting 4 sticky cards into the field for 1 week at canopy height. This sampling went on either until all of the mummies had been chewed or emerged, or for 8 days, at which point we could determine that any whole mummies left were dead. The next three slides that I'm going to show you give the results from the experimental plants, and all of them will have the same x-axis, with the initial soybean aphid density on the experimental plants increasing. On this slide, what you can see is that there were more predators observed on the plants with a high initial soybean aphid density, indicating that there was greater predator aggregation to the plants with higher soybean aphid densities. Also, the emergence, the number of mummies that were counted as emerged on the experimental plants was the highest when there were the least number of soybean aphids on the plant initially, indicating that Binodoxus communis was most successful here when there was a low initial soybean aphid density. And while this shows that Binodoxus communis was more successful at low aphid densities, this slide shows the primary mechanism, and that's that when soybean aphid density initially was higher, we counted a greater number of chewed mummies on the experimental plants. So to put that all together, we found that when aphid density was greater on our experimental plants, predator aggregation increased, caused increased intraguild predation, and reduced Binodoxus communis success. Thus, density-dependent apparent competition occurred between the soybean aphid and Binodoxus communis on our experimental plants, mediated by their shared resident predators. Now I'm going to describe to you the results from our secondary goal, which was determining how intraguild predation of Binodoxus communis was affected by the surrounding field. Here what you're looking at is, on the x-axis, a predator to aphid index, which was determined by counting the number of predators on the sticky cards in a field and dividing that by the per plant aphid density. On the y-axis of both this and the next slide is the number of emerged mummies on our experimental plants. What we found was that as the predator to aphid ratio increased, the number of emerged mummies that we counted on our experimental plants decreased. In contrast, plant size had a positive relationship with the number of emerged mummies on our experimental plants. So as the number of leaves per plant on the soybean plants in the surrounding field increased, the number of mummies that we counted as emerged also increased. So to sum up the conclusions from our secondary goal, we found two things. First, that predator to aphid ratios in the field surrounding your focal plants are an important indicator of intraguild predation strength. And secondly, increasing plant size reduced the strength of intraguild predation, and this could possibly be due to two non-exclusive mechanisms. First of all, as plant size increases, there's an increased total potential search area for predators. And secondly, possibly as plant size increases, predators that were once searching the entire plant may start to be more spatially selective, and for example may search only in the canopy, making them less likely to find mummies elsewhere. And the second result has been reported in other systems as well. So our work has some implications both ecologically and for biological control. First off, if density-dependent apparent competition like we witnessed is common in the field, it may select parasitoids to oviposit less on high aphid density patches. And if this is true, inverse density-dependent host use by parasitoids may result. This inverse density-dependent host use has been reported in many parasitoids, and it may cause these parasitoids to be less effective at controlling pests during outbreak years. And as a final note, field tests like this one that allow predator aggregation to occur are likely going to return different results from tests in laboratories or mesocosms where predator aggregation cannot occur. And so when you're designing experiments wanting to test the effect of extraguild prey and intraguild predation or any similar sort of experiment, you should be really conscious of whether you care about whether predator aggregation occurs or not. And with that, I'd like to acknowledge anyone that's helped me either with the fieldwork or with suggestions on the presentation. I'd like to acknowledge my funding, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Plenty of time for questions.
And Beck? Well, so there's a you can start to tell that the aphid is parasitized before it mummifies, and that at in room temperature, so about 75 degrees, that can be about 6 to 7 days, at which point they get larger than a normal aphid, more oval shaped and usually a little milky colored, I would say. But they don't really start to mummify until 7 or 8 days. But this is definitely temperature dependent. Simon?
Jory, do you have any sense of whether the parasitoid in combination with the predators can then be complementary, that the parasitoids are attacking the low density, predators aggregate in the high density? Have you played around with that at all?
Well, I haven't played around with that in this context specifically, but well, I think that so you're saying that maybe the parasitoids are going to attack just the low density patches, and maybe the predators are going to attack the high density patches. That may end up being complementary, but one problem is that although we know that the predators do aggregate density dependently and have a significant effect on soybean aphids at high densities, oftentimes that aggregation does not really occur until the aphids have reached treatable densities. So we'd really like to have the parasitoids have an effect there as well, although whether that happens is unknown.
Do they have any evidence that
their
predation is beneficial?
To the resident predators, you mean? Oh, whether integral predation is
beneficial to the parasite?
I don't have any evidence of that. I would guess that it's probably not beneficial, just because they're being eaten, and so the population is declining.
We should probably move on.
All right, thank you very much.